Hey, everybody, welcome to Shop Talk Show. God, we have an excellent show for you this week. But before we kick it off, I want to mention two of our amazing sponsors, two and only two. Environments for Humans, they do conferences for web nerds like us. The big one coming up is in Hawaii. We'll tell you about that later in the show. And a brand new sponsor to us, one that I dearly love, Peepcode, peepcode.com. They sell like instructional screencasts, and they do an amazing job. They have one really cool series that I've learned a lot from that I'll share with you later in the show, too. So check out peepcode.com, and let's kick things off, eh?
Welcome to episode something or other of the Shop Talk Show podcast.
It's number 40.
Is it 40? I'm not good at math. So, yeah, so of the Shop Talk Show.
We should be buying sports cars and stuff and, like combing our comb-overs over. I think we're having a midlife crisis, Pop.
Yeah, I just bought a Ferrari, an orange one. Hey, on that note, one time I had a dream about I had a dream where I bought a yellow Lamborghini.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was having a midlife crisis in my dream. Maybe I was watching too much Top Gear, but I bought a yellow Lamborghini, and I didn't have anywhere to drive it. So I was just driving around downtown Austin, like calling people, "Hey, dude, you done with work? I could pick you up in my Lamborghini." That's what I would do if I had a fancy car. Anyway, I'm Dave Rupert, midlife crisis, and with me is Chris Coyer. Chris.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have another guest from the lovely UK, Laura.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey.
Laura, I have a question.
Okay.
So you are from Surrey, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
I once had a girlfriend from Surrey named Laura. And so for a little while, I've been living in fear that you were that girl. So,
are you Dave's ex-girlfriend?
I don't think I'm Dave's ex-girlfriend, no.
Okay, perfect. All right, good. Then we can proceed. A little bit of hot drama there. There you go.
Ooh, we do have a little bit of... That's how we generally start the show. We have lots of Q&A, some good stuff for Laura to talk about. But there's, you know, we like to start off with a little news and links of the day. It's actually, you know, in the real world here, it's been a little while since me and Dave have been on the line. We had some if you are avid listeners, rapid-fire shows that we've been airing because me and Dave have been traveling a bunch and stuff. So this is the first live show we've shot in a little while. There was a – Dave, you have one in here about titled UX is Bollocks. And it was a newsletter that Aaron Walter, who is the UX lead at MailChimp, sent out to his – he has like a little email – kind of list that he sends to, and he was talking it. And then it wasn't like verses. It was very light as far as hot drama goes, but it was, what's his name? Mr. Malarkey.
Andy Clark.
There you go. Sorry, Andy. God dang it. And he said UX is bollocks, and Aaron was kind of refuting that claim exactly. Do you want to fill us in on that, Dave?
Yeah, it was just an interesting kind of talk. Just Andy is a bit gregarious, we might say, and he just – and unapologetically so. But he was just saying like UX as a profession or UX designers is just completely made up and it's not even real or something. And then Aaron came back and was like, well, yes and no, bad – UX is super prevalent, but like a good UX designer is worth every penny. And so did you read this, Laura? Did you get a chance to cruise through this?
No, I didn't. I'm not really sure. There's a lot of people releasing email newsletters at the moment, and I don't really understand because I get enough email. So I've struggled to follow all the blogs as it is, let alone letting more email in. So no, I'm a bit behind on that.
It is a bit of an interesting trend, isn't it? I like it because eventually it'll go away and we'll come back to the blog, and I'll be like, see, blogging is cool. It's always been cool. It always will be cool.
If only I could get a collection of emails that people could subscribe to. If something like that technology existed.
Yes.
Anyway, it's a really good read. We'll keep a link in the show notes, but I think it's worth kind of, you know, we have people like SEO, you know, snake salesmen, you know, snake oil salesmen, and we have people who just call themselves UX designers and they're not a value add. They're not, you know, so I just thought it was a very interesting thing.
It was. It sounded like Andy was dealing with not even a UX designer, but just a sub-genre of kind of crappy visual designer. Like, they don't have any visual design skills, so they just say that they're a UX designer and they just make wireframes and send them along to actual designers. It seemed like a pretty bad situation. I could see why he would you know, have some negative things to say about that.
And it sounded like they were putting, like, components in there from this, like, whatever book of components they have, and he's like, this doesn't work in a responsive context. So anyway, that was just interesting. Yeah,
it was indeed. Okay, let's see. This is one that I personally got fired up, and I didn't see that much hot drama go on. And again, you guys, sorry if we're a little behind the times on this, but remember when we had what is wrong with my brain today? Oh, I love her so much, too. Rebecca Murphy on, and we were like, she had some hot drama to say about Net Magazine, which is based in the UK, is it not?
It is, yeah.
About some JavaScript article that was full of some misinformation. And then there was one that got published about it just pretty much straight up smack-talking HTML5 and how we shouldn't use it. Did you see that?
I remember that, yeah.
So it's like a month ago now, so sorry if it's this is a little old. But man, was I'm going to straight up say, hot drama alert, it was terrible, and I'm pissed that it was published. Because I read through...
They retracted it in the end, didn't they? They took it down. They said that they would always edit things that they published on the web. They could always edit them afterwards anyway. But that one had slipped through the net.
Because it's on there now. It's still up. And, you know, there's a lot of positive comments on it too. But I mean, I could go through it one by one. But I'm just going to say, F that article. I literally have a note here of seven or eight things that I think are ridiculous that are in that article. And let's just leave it at that, I guess. Let's maybe I'll do it. Chris is mad.
Angry Chris is angry. I've seen a few. I'm not going to speak specifically, but just a few blog posts that came out, and you're just kind of questioning. Whoa, that seems a little off base to me. But I don't know. I've been preoccupied, but I don't know. Blog posts are tough because they're out of date immediately, and then maybe they started on a bad idea. Yeah, I don't know.
I just think you should avoid name calling in it, which happened a couple of times. You called it some markup wonks, and it was wonk. So what does the word wonk mean? I kind of like it, but it just means like idiot, I think.
It's just baiting. Those kind of articles are just baiting people.
Oh, and the best was like, okay, so what should we do then if we shouldn't use HTML5 elements? And it's like, oh, well, you'll have to buy the book then because that's the next chapter. Like, yeah, suck it.
Flame bait to
sales. Here's the next one. It's not exactly hot drama, but I find it interesting. I'd like to get somebody who's involved with this on. But have you guys seen webplatform.org?
Yes.
This is
kind of a big initiative from a whole bunch of browser vendors and a whole bunch of smarties like the HTML5 boilerplate team. Am I right in saying that?
Just because Paul Irish was on both those Divya things, and so is Divya too. Yeah, so, you know, W3C's on board. If you're looking at the logos at the bottom of the page anyway, there's some big names that are involved in this. And that's where I kind of, I have some questions about this. So I'm going to avoid any hot drama here and just say that it would be nice if we could get somebody on the Shop Talk show to talk about this and what its future is and what the real deal is. But I had some, like, big questions about this right when it came out. Namely, like, okay, for example, the biggest, like, open, contributable, comprehensive docs about the web right now is the MDN, right? Is the Mozilla Developer Network. They have tons of great docs in there. Yes. Can we agree on that?
Yep.
Cool. And they're on board. Their logo is in the footer, right? Mozilla.
Yes.
And they're saying, and then I think I heard Paul say that all that content can come over if you want. Just, you know, just go copy it over or just go move it. And you're like, well, why doesn't Mozilla move it, you know, or whatever? Like, it just seems weird. Like, you want us to go hit edit on your wiki and copy it and come over to this wiki and hit find the relevant page and hit edit and paste it in there? Like, that's weird, and that's probably not a great idea overall. And then, like, once we're done doing that, let's say somebody, like, dedicates weeks of their lives to doing this or more, Is then now there's like two separate copies of it. Like, which one is the most up to date? Like, are changes going to be ported over? Like, is Mozilla Developer Network just going to shut down and redirect all their links to this? Because that would, like, kind of make the most sense, right? Because, like, I just don't understand. Is Microsoft going to do this thing? Are all these companies going to shut down their own docs? Or are they going to have people on board that are in charge of moving changes from their own docs over into this too, and vice versa?
I think the intent, and I'm not on this at all, I think the intent is to have like a best practices citable source. MDN tends to lean heavily on like HTML and JavaScript, you know, it's very like, this is for real, you know, this is like how you code this thing. It's like a W3 schools replacement. This looks like more like Wikipedia for niche web things. That's my take on it. And, yeah.
Other thoughts?
Laura, what's your opinion? Is this the best website ever or the worst website ever?
It's nice and all, but I don't know how even if they copy all their documents across, how are they going to be consistent between each one? So people going to refer to a particular topic and they've got a Microsoft original document and a Mozilla original document, how are they going to know which is better? And are they the same? And is there going to be a crossover as well? So it really needs to be its own thing, because if it's just getting everything from everywhere else, then you're going to end up with doubles of everything, surely.
Yeah.
Triples, and quadruples.
Half doubles, you know? Where, yeah.
That's true.
Simurai, yep, in the chat is pointing out DocHub.io.
DocHub is cool, but it's just MDN. It's just an interface around MDN.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that's where they got it from. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's super cool. Makes me jealous because it came right out after I wanted to start doing my almanac. I'm like, oh, this is better.
Thanks.
You but win. I have my own. I've changed. Anyway, I just think what this needs to me is five, maybe, full-timers, and there's maybe a few people who can do like technical editing, and then three or more like people that are like kick-ass at content. They're just like, they're good at organizing and curating and dealing with content, because there's going to be like, this is just going to be a huge amount of content, and it needs to be kind of well curated and well maintained and well cross-linked and well just well cared after. And I think it needs some full-timers to do it. That would be kind of cool to see if there are those people, and like maybe like each of these companies could contribute one or something like that. I just think to have it be completely open, to have like there be nobody like steering the ship. It's just kind of like, oh, we designed this thing and let's let the users edit it. It's just not going to turn into what everyone hopes it will. But maybe somebody from we don't actually know anything. This is all from the outside here. It's an alpha. They're very clear about it being an alpha. So be cool to get, maybe we'll get Divya on to talk about it.
I want to see where it goes. I want more. Give me more.
Let's do some cues. We have some good ones for Laura here, and that's the point of this show, is questions for our awesome guest. So, look, you redesigned your website recently. Do you want to, like, give us a little, like, a little, what your experience was like doing that? Or is that one of the, or do you even want to talk about that? I don't even know. You know?
No, I'm cool talking about that. It's because it had been, like, 4 years since I did my site, so it was seriously out of date. I kept updating the portfolio, but nothing else. And so it got to the point where people were going, why are you talking about responsive design when your own site isn't responsive? And I didn't have the time to really do much to it because I had lots of client work and things like that, and it kind of gets on top of you. So it took a while, and to actually design for yourself is really hard. To get something that you feel accurately represents you is quite, it's strange. It's kind of like bearing yourself in some way, like saying this is my taste in design, not what I'm doing for my clients. So it was a bit scary, and it was really intimidating launching it and knowing that people would suddenly see how I did responsive stuff and things like that. It was a bit scary, but it was good fun.
I can imagine. Especially as a freelancer. So you definitely consider yourself and are. Yeah,
definitely freelancer.
Okay, cool. Yeah, right. And so you like most of your job and most of your time and hours of the day are trying to make other people happy with the, you know, right? So it's like,
yeah, it's a much easier problem to solve.
Yeah. Like, did you feel like lost in any way? Like, do I even have a style anymore or not?
Well, yeah, how do I represent myself? Because there wasn't really anything that I felt stood out that I could do. And also, when it comes to responsive design now, a lot of it is not about visual gimmicks. You're not trying to do sort of clever decorative things and stuff like that, which is what I might have leaned on a bit before. Mm-hmm. And so now I really had to concentrate on doing something that was fairly minimal so that I could really get the content like easy to read and things like that, make it as digestible as possible.
Yeah.
And so
did you have any like guiding goals or guiding vision for?
I was really focused on getting a really nice typeface, and I knew that once I did that I'd be quite sorted, because when you're on a small screen you don't really need much else other than a really nice readable typeface. And so that was, I knew once I got that, I was. It was easier to do it after that.
But you did, right? Avener, yeah?
Yeah, and I like it.
So good. That was my favorite for a long, long time. Such a good one. Where do you even get that?
That's fonts.com, web fonts.
Ah, fonts.com. That's definitely not typeset.
Yeah, they've got rights to a lot of stuff on there that you can't get in other places. I mean, all of them do. All the services have their particular deals with the particular foundries, so in order to use Avener I had to go fonts.com, but they've been good. It's been very reliable for me.
Is it self-hosted with fonts.com? Do you have to chuck those files up on your own server and self-host, or do you link up JavaScript or whatever?
Yeah, I think you can self-host if you want to pay a super mega extremely expensive version, but otherwise it's you link to their CSS file. And I was wary of it, but actually it doesn't seem to have had any effect on the performance of the page.
Oh, so you link right to their CSS too, which is interesting, which is also different than how Typekit runs, you know. Which
it's no JavaScript in fonts.com, which is what I preferred to do.
I mean, there's definitely some specific preferables to that. Like most, you know, like there's pretty much no such thing as fout anymore. And that's because, you know, when you link it up through CSS, it just deals with that. Like, they kind of solved that problem. But, like, when you do it with JavaScript and inject CSS, now fout comes back. So Typekit has to deal with that in different ways.
Using anything JavaScript when I'm trying to deal with mobile stuff. I think if anyone's on a poor connection, JavaScript is just well worth avoiding as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. They have some like async things they're doing now, Typekit, but then that makes the fout even worse than it was. I like it. Let's at least it should be an option. So that's good on fonts.com to be doing that. Let's see. Do we haven't even made it to a question yet. We better get into one. go ahead.
Okay, Abdul J writes in, question for Laura. What's your process of designing a website? I ask this question because I usually start with paper mockups and then start coding in HTML, CSS. The problem is that I don't focus on the code structure more than the look and feel. Any insight there, Laura? How do you take a website from your brain to the HTML?
I always start on paper. After having the content, I'll always I do a lot of sketching, and I think that starts out. I always did art and design and things like that, and I started out doing graphic design. So I'm quite a paper person to begin with, and then sometimes now it varies. Sometimes I'll do style tiles. If I'm working with quite a savvy client. If not, sometimes I do more visual mock-ups that are based on a sort of, I call them like, they're like snapshots of different screen sizes. So I don't sort of focus around necessarily 320 pixels and 768, things like that. But I take snapshots of random screen sizes, say, oh, this might look like at these various sizes. And then from there, I'll go into HTML and CSS. I do find it quite difficult to design in the browser. I find it easier to get visual stuff down first, which is.
But you didn't even mention like Photoshop or Fireworks or anything. So you don't like design in the browser or those tools. It's the paper.
I try to rely heavily on paper. Then I'll go into something. I used to use Photoshop and Illustrator. Now I'm a big fan of a Sketch app from Bohemian Coding. It's a brilliant. It's vector based and it's designed for web graphics, and you can export like 2x the size, so it's good for app design and things like that. And I think it suits my workflow a bit better. And it has things like borders and shadows that mimic CSS. I think you can even export CSS for particular elements from there as well.
Wow.
So that's it's a nice thing for doing web graphics in. So I'm
more
right now. Like that.
They have a free trial.
And it's very affordable as well, which is more than you can say for the Adobe suite.
Yeah. It is fun. So it looks like it's $50. They have a pretty cool icon of like a diamond melting into colors.
I've never even
heard of this. But it won an Apple Design Award. Cool. That's cool. Yeah, all right. That's good. It's nice to have especially options. People are like, what software do you use? And like it's nice to be able to have something that, you know, isn't $1,299 to recommend once in a while.
And they update it a lot. So I run the beta all the time. Of their app, because they update it constantly, a lot quicker than Apple will update it in the App Store as well. And they're constant. I think every day they release a new version that's got some sort of fix in. So you know that they're actively developing it and fixing bugs and things like that you wish that Adobe had been doing Photoshop for years. There are so many bugs in Photoshop. So it's quite nice to see that there are developers that are really
on. Isn't that a funny feel-good thing? Like, it's like, I feel like even if I was to do a new software product where I had to update versions, I feel like every week or so I would just push out something. Just for, even if I didn't actually change anything, I'll be like, no, I've updated the README or something. Just because you're like, oh, yeah, they're in active development. Makes you feel good.
You've just unlocked my GitHub strategy, Chris. Never update anything but READMEs.
So your date always stays? Repo, yeah. RAS updated last week.
No, I didn't.
Oh, we got one from William Owen here. It's an audio question here.
Here we go.
Hello there, William Owen from the UK here with a question for Laura. You recently did a great job of redesigning your website, and I think it's such a hard thing to do for a designer to be their own client. I was wondering if you could tell us what the key decisions you made were and what the challenges you faced when you were working on your design. Also, as a slight follow-up question, I was wondering what you see as the challenges for designers designing for responsive design and how you see them being addressed. Keep up the awesome show, guys. Love it. Take care, and thanks for taking my question.
All right. Well, thanks, William. That was maybe one of the top recorded audio quality questions we've ever had. That was really good. Laura, can you walk us through the key discussions, I think he called them, when in the challenges you face when you're doing your redesign. Or maybe start us off with a bit of a walkthrough of your redesign. You kind of went with like a color for each page sort of situation. Is that right?
Yeah, so I wanted to go really minimal on the layout and the typography, keep it clean and things like that. And I was thinking that the one element I could make different and interesting is actually the color, because I really love designing with color, and I'm not really a white background kind of girl. Like, I don't feel like it represents me very well, because I tend to use a lot of color in my design. And while a lot of people say that you need to have a neutral portfolio so that your work can show through, I didn't want to have the white background. So I decided, well, what if I make the colors of the page reflect the project on the page? And so for each project, the page has got a color scheme that matches that project. Each blog post, the color scheme matches the subject of the blog post, or it takes colors out of the photos. And then for the about pages and things like that, they're all sort of random colors that I chose that I thought kind of suited the topic a bit, or I just tried to go a bit rainbow color on them, and a sort of different one for each section.
This is great. You don't even, not that, you, I'm just saying, you have a very active profile on Color Lovers. So you don't even just say you like color. This is a full-blown obsession with color. People love these things. Look at the views you get on your color palette. It's crazy.
They have been there for a very long time. I think I've been on that site for probably going on 6 or 7 years.
Man, this is awesome. These are nice. All right, cool. Color Lover, officially.
Yeah. I thought that would be an interesting way to differentiate. And on the pages where it got a bit plain and there wasn't any photos, I decided to put a little bit of illustration in there, because I do that every now and again, and I sort of found a style that I liked that I've been using on slides in my talks that I've been doing recently. And so I thought, oh, why not stick some of that in as well, just to brighten the page up where there aren't any images to look at.
Sure. Cool.
Where's
that, the about page?
Yeah, on the home page and the about page. It only shows up though if you've got quite a wide screen. So it's like a little extra for the
That's
screen.
Rad, like really sketchy, and yeah, that's sweet. That's all you, huh? You just paper it, scan it, clean it up, toss it
in.
Sweet. God, that's great. Great use of the huge screen. I'm like, I don't see any Awesome. I liked how it, that's one of my favorite things to look for in responsive design, is when you make the screen wide, then you can watch it load quick, which means that you did it right, and that image isn't loaded at small screens, you know? So you're like, it's not like preloaded, and then if you get it loaded, it just like unhides or whatever. No.
I'm not using any of those display none naughties in there.
Awesome. All right.
Did you have any like challenges, or can you generalize what like challenges there are for designers doing responsive, and maybe you learned from doing your site or another site?
I think one of the biggest ones is definitely navigation. I think that we're still struggling to find a good thing for navigation. Even I've had nightmares with the jQuery on my site and things like that still. But it's more things like, I've got a drop-down element in my menu. How on earth do you represent that in mobile? Especially if you're looking at small screens that maybe don't have support for JavaScript, you might end up with a menu that's a mile long, and the ways to hide it and reveal it they're quite tricky to get around. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things. I think that, because it's so important to get to be able to browse a site properly, to have the navigation working. So I'd say that's definitely the biggest challenge. And also, if you've got a lot of images, it can make for quite a scroll-heavy page. And so trying to find a way that you can still see what's in the images, but not making them too big, that could be quite a challenge, like finding the right balance between screen width and image size.
Yeah. Awesome. Classic hard question in design. It's always images. What do we got here, Dave? Do
you want next to... question comes from Brian Weaver. And
oh, yeah, this is fluff. I put but go ahead. It's not fluff, Brian. No, it's good. No, it's good.
Let's hear Mr. Weaver's question. I feel like you have a quick answer to this, so here we go.
Hey, guys. I'd love to hear what your go-to plugins are for WordPress theme development. Thanks.
Kind of a classic question, just in terms of like,
what's your plugin stack? Yeah, I put it in here for a couple of reasons, because one is I've made that blog post, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. Thanks, Brian. You got me to blog this thing that I've been meaning for a while. So at csstrix.com/wordpress-plugins-i-use is a list from there. But now that I'm listening to Brian's question more specifically, oh, well, the other reason I put it in is because Laura used WordPress on the site, I can tell. So that was interesting. Laura's... I don't know. Are you like, do you do WordPress a lot, or did you pick it on this project just for?
I do it a lot. I think I do it for most of my clients. I do custom themes for their sites, and probably my favorite two plugins are Advanced Custom Fields, which I used on my site to choose all the colors, because I didn't want to go through and edit CSS every time I wanted to change the color scheme on a page. So I've actually got form fields in the admin for each page where I just pick the colors, and it's got a color picker.
Are they input type color?
Or did you I think they are. Yeah, it's an actual color field, which is brilliant. It's built into Advanced Custom Fields. And Gravity Forms. I love a bit of Gravity Forms. And that's a great one. I use that on everything.
No comment. That's an offline. That's an offliner. Cool. And but what Brian said, just in re-listening to his questions, he's like, what do you recommend for WordPress theme development? And I was like, maybe that's a slightly different question. And that, like, are themes like literally for the development process, or just did Brian just mean, you know, just like, what are your favorite plugins kind of thing? So when I listened to that, I was like, well, the most important ones I use generally on a site are like ones like W3 Total Cache, you know, that's like non-negotiable, like that has to go on a site on my sites, just because it, you know, it keeps the server, it reduces load by such a tremendous amount that it keeps your site fast forever, even at ridiculous scale. And then I use WordPress SEO because it automates so many of those dumb things that are like actually pretty important and need to be done, like sitemaps and handling titles and meta descriptions and all that stuff that sucks to do on your own. So it's pretty vital. Even just putting it in there and turning it on does so much for you that it's awesome. And then I use VaultPress, which is that paid thing from Automattic that just like backs up your database and files on your server in kind of real time. So it's like if somebody like leaves a comment, it's immediately synced up on VaultPress. You know, it does that kind of real time backup, which feels good. It's like Dropbox backup for your blog, kind of makes me feel better. But none of those are for theme development, really. So I was like, I wonder if he's talking about individual themes. I was like, well, if you're designing a very specific theme, like what cool features does that theme have in it? You know, like is there social stuff going on that theme? Is there a ton of content, or is it not so much? Or is it bloggy or not bloggy? Is there interactive stuff or not? Anyway, so the couple that I use in CS Strix are one called Feature Comments, which is just adds little links that only the admin can see, which you can click feature or bury, and it will like if I click feature, it just adds a CSS class name to that list item, and I can use that CSS class name to, I don't know why I always say CSS class name, but you know what I mean, it adds a class. it's an HTML, whatever, it's a class, and then I just, you know, use that class to apply a gold star or some kind of feature that comment in some way to be like, good comment, man, or, you know, person. It's just like a positive reinforcement for doing good comments. And if it's spam, I just delete it. But I also have bury for, you know, quote unquote bad comments. You know, when people just write a comment that's like, thanks, with 3 exclamation points. I bury that and I let people see that I buried it, you know, kind of as like public, you know, and sorry to the person leaving that comment. I'm not trying to be a jerk to you. I'm trying to be respectful to other people who have made it this far down the page that they're trying to dig up information, and you're taking up valuable mind cycles for them. So Ibera. Anyway, that's a nice comment. I have articles about that I'll put in the show notes. And, you know, I really like that Yet Another Related Posts plugin. That one does a really good job of finding related posts to the one you're looking at. And I use WP Polls on CSS Tricks to handle polls. So I just thought I would put that in here because I recently blogged about it and stuff.
Good share.
Yeah.
Good share.
I'm sorry, I've been talking a bunch, but I'm going to talk just a minute longer because I want to say we have a brand new sponsor this week on the Shop Talk Show called Peep Code. I'm kind of in, like, if I could do a poll right now, it'd be cool to be able to do real. How many people have heard of Peep Code? I hope it's everybody because they've been doing screencasts forever. They were kind of my inspiration for ever even starting screencasts way, way back when on CSS Tricks. And they did it, they've always done it to a like quality level that I didn't even try to match. You know, it's like they do great. You know, if you want good screencasts, you can listen to Peep Code stuff, but I'm going to do my own little screencast too, just because I want to. But they, you know, they just, you know, all kinds of stuff on Rails and jQuery and Backbone and Vim and, you know, just anything you want. And you just buy them one off, you know, and listen to them. But there's a really cool series that they've been doing. It's not super duper new, but it's one of their newer types of series, I think, called Play by Play. And I became aware of it when Ryan Singer, Ryan is a designer for 37 Signals, did a, you know, it's not really a screencast. It's like him talking with one of the dudes from Peep Code about being a designer. So it's not like, a training exercise or something. This guy, like, blindsides Ryan kind of so Ryan has like no prep kind of. As far as I know, and he designed this, and he just gives Ryan a design problem, and he has to think it out on camera. Like, how would I approach this design problem? Using any tools you want, use your computer, use paper or whatever. And it's a two-part series where he, you know, tackles this, and you can really hear and see the mind of a designer working. And I think that's so rare, and so interesting to hear. And there's a bunch of people like that. It's not just Ryan, but there's, you know, Kyle Neath, who's GitHub, and Yehuda Katz in here, and some people that you get to watch do their job. And it's just it's a cool thing for me because I'm into this idea of kind of working in public and seeing people's mind work. That's one of the things you can check out. Yeah.
It's kind of the ultimate, like, pro tip, like, centers. There's some, you know, like, Yehuda Katz, basically, he does a lot of stuff now, but like, I think more on the JavaScript side of things, but like, he kind of fixed Rails in a lot of ways, and, you know, he's just, these guys are smart, so lots of pro tips here.
And to see them, you know, to see their mind churn is cool. Less like a polished, finished product, kind of like, here, watch me do something perfectly. Here, watch me do something live. You know,
yeah. Pretty cool. Thanks for
sponsoring Peep Code. I am a big fan. I literally own a whole bunch of Peep Code podcasts that I keep in my iTunes.
Well, cool. Awesome. So we're going to keep going. The next question is from Josh Rives, and it's about SaaS. Laura, do you use SaaS?
I do indeed.
Okay, good. All right.
That's why I put it in here, so you outed me.
All right, here we go. So I just started using SaaS, and I'm trying out Live Reload. How do you recommend incorporating a CSS reset? I've seen Compass plugins for the HTML5 boilerplate, but I haven't tried Compass yet. I guess I could copy and paste the CSS into my SCSS, but that doesn't seem right. So how do you get started? What's the first, like, getting into, like, setting up the reset and stuff like that? How do you do that, Laura?
I have a base SCSS file where I put in a reset, one that I've adapted myself. It resets sizes and things like that, but it doesn't take away outlines and all of those things. So it keeps some of the good stuff in. And then I start with mixins. And so then I've got a whole list of mixins then a whole load of variables, and then I start setting all of the default HTML elements from there. So I think I still do it in quite an old school, the way you'd probably lay out a CSS file. I'm not quite got into the automating absolutely everything point yet. It's a bit intimidating for someone that's... I really think of myself as a designer, and a lot of the SaaS stuff seems to go quite into the programmy style of doing things, which I find a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean.
And then it's just a matter of, like, in your screen.scss file or whatever your main.scss, whatever your the file you're referencing in your HTML, you just do, like, at import file name, like partial name, like reset or base, as you called it.
Sure. So in the case of using normalize, you would just, call it normalize.scss and at import normalize. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, big chunk of that stuff at the beginning.
Totally. I mean, that's what I do too. Just because Josh says he's literally using Compass here, or I've seen Compass plugins here. There's a reset that just comes with Compass, so you don't even have to do anything. You can just go like at, I don't even know what it is, at import something, something, and it just gives you whatever Compass thinks is a good reset. I don't use that just because, you know, as a CSS nerd, I like to be pretty specific about the stuff I
Somebody's really snooty about their reset.
Oh, what is it? Oh, it looks like you have a bunch of choices here. There's the Compass reset, or you can choose to use the blueprint reset, I guess. And it's up to it. It's just no, import Compass utilities general reset. Whatever. Yeah.
At that point, for me, it's easier to just go to HTML5 doctor, copy the reset, and paste it in. my own CSS file.
Well, then you can edit it, which you can't with the Compass one, probably. Exactly, you'd have to edit some core stuff.
And that's what I do, Josh. And I think, like, you should, that's probably, you know, if that makes sense to you, that's probably what you should do. You could get into, like, nesting, you know, like doing all, you know, like getting into all your SAS affordances, but just, it's not going to make a huge difference. It could actually hurt. Well, maybe hurt performance. I don't know.
Hurt your brain.
Yeah, hurt your brain. So I just copy your favorite reset and put it in. Normalize, whatever you like.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I think that's acceptable. I'm kind of interested in... So you have this set of mixins that you use, Laura, that are like kind of your own crafting or of something. But not Compass, right?
No, I make my own everything. I'm really funny about frameworks. I like everything to be incredibly semantic, and I like to understand everything that I'm putting in there. And so I sort of, when people start talking about boilerplates and things like that, I get a bit sort of itchy. It's, I don't feel comfortable with it. And some of the HTML it produces is really ugly. It's not readable. It's not reusable. And it's not how I think HTML should be.
Indeed. We have another question just for you from Matthew James. Hi, Laura. How difficult do you find it to sell responsive design to smaller clients? So we've talked a lot about your website and some process stuff, but we haven't talked about your life as a freelancer too much. I've seen you talk before, and you talk about responsive design. So it's part of your repertoire, isn't it? And do you bring this to clients and say, this is what I'm going to do for you? Or
I do. It depends on the client. So a lot of my clients, I'm very lucky. I work with quite a few people that are already sort of in the web industry. So they mostly know what responsive design is and are after it anyway, because that's the standard. But a lot of, if I get a smaller client, I think sometimes explaining it to them might scare them off a bit. And so a lot of time I just include it as standard. So I don't even feel the need to tell them that it's going to look a bit different on mobile, things like that. I just do it. It's an idea that it's... Anna Debenham said it first. She said it's like accessibility. You wouldn't necessarily go over all the ins and outs of what you do to make your site accessible. So treat responsive stuff like that. Just, you don't need to tell the client, you just do it.
That's great. That's refreshing. Yeah. Because some people talk about like the cost of it and how it's... you know, you have to upsell it or whatever, because it's, you know, it's getting harder these days. But if it's just part of your natural workflow, which you think with people like even younger than us, it's definitely going to be a part of, you know, like this is a very temporary situation we're in. Like eventually this is just going to be how it goes, right?
Yeah, it's part of keeping up. It's part of being a modern web designer is doing that. So yeah, I think when clients come to you, they expect you to do the best that you can. And I think responsive is the best you can do now.
Yeah, do we have some kind of clap graphic or sound effect? Here.
Well, yeah, let me do that. Or this one.
Great job.
I've heard somebody say, like, if you want to sell responsive, you just say, I'll make it work on an iPhone. And people go, oh, here's all my money. It works. But I've never tried that in person. But that would be maybe we could have some Shop Talk listeners try that and report back.
It's a good thing to do if you've got a very non-tech savvy client and they're really not sure. And if you end up mentioning the design, like if they go, well, how come it looks different when it's full screen from when it's not full screen? And you say, oh, I'm making it so it looks good on iPhone. Everyone understands that.
Yep.
Is there some little test you can do to make sure they don't have an Android phone though? Like just in case, you know, because if they do, they probably aren't as like happy with your iPhone answer. That if there's some kind of like subtle question you can ask,
find out.
I don't think many
Droid
clients are the typical users.
Droid Dar.
That's good. We have a sponsor. If you've ever listened to Shop Talk Show, you know who they are. They're Environments for Humans. They're fabulous people. They do conferences, both online and offline. The online ones are cool because you don't have to fly anywhere. You know, you just settle into your couch and
you can make hot chocolate. Sweatpants.
Mm-hmm. As a speaker or a listener. Well, you do. They do see you on camera a little bit, but you don't have to wear pants. But anyway, we'll let you know about any online ones as they come up here. But the big one that they're doing, they do what, you know, just what we call in the biz face-to-face conferences, or in their business anyway, you know, ones where you go and you hang out and you talk with other people and you watch speakers on stage. The big two coming up are back-to-back, and they're doing them in Honolulu, Hawaii. So that is incontrolconference.com. That's in Honolulu, Hawaii. It's going to be December 2nd through 4th. So there's, you know, there's everything. There's speakers and workshops and stuff. I'm doing a talk there. Dave's doing a talk. I'm doing a workshop there. Lots of big names. That's going to be cool. So check that out, incontrolconference.com. Again, that's December 2nd through 4th in Honolulu, Hawaii. So if you want to go, get on it and book your tickets. Book your flight, because that's going to be a part of the cost of this for sure. So that's cool. But man, if you live in the Midwest or something, or anywhere it's cold, it gets pretty cold in the UK in December, doesn't it? Does it snow where you live?
Yes, it does. It gets very cold over here. It's miserable. It's chucking it down with rain at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. It does that most of the time here.
So if you live anywhere near Laura, buy your tickets to Honolulu. And then CSS DevConf is right after that. And I'm excited for that one, too, because I like conferences that are so specific sometimes. I went to a jQuery conference one time, and it was a really enjoyable one because it was so specific. Everybody was talking about kind of the same thing. If you open somebody's laptop, they're like hacking on some jQuery. You can get help on jQuery. Like, everybody's, like, on the same page. And for some reason, I really liked it. I really liked how specific it was to one technology. And that's what this is going to be, but for CSS. So everybody's going to be talking about CSS, which is my jam. I'll be speaking at that one as well. It's December 5th in Honolulu, so you get to go to both if you want, or skip it. Go to In Control, take the day off, learn to surf, learn to chase mavericks, whatever you want.
I just looked at the schedule for CSS DevConf. I'll be speaking at the same time as Paul Irish talking about getting 60 frames per second CSS performance through tools.
So you'll back the house.
Yeah, well, so I may just stop my talk and we all go attend Paul's. So we'll see. No, it's going to be a fun time. I'm excited, really.
We have a few more questions. Let's talk more about responsive design. That's the fun thing. And that's last time I saw Laura, we were at like that Future of Everything thing in Vegas. Right?
Yeah, Future Insights. Yeah.
And you talked twice, didn't you?
I did.
And they were both, at least once was about responsive design. So you have some things to say about.
Yeah, the second one I did, yeah, one on fonts and one on responsive design. I do like a good bit of responsive design. I think it's very interesting challenges now, and people talk a lot about development, but not very much about design itself. And I think that's a shame, because there are a lot of design challenges that aren't necessarily development challenges, and the way we think about, the way we present content on the screen, and that's very complicated and can't just be solved by media queries and things like that. It needs a lot more in-depth thinking.
Totally.
Yeah, it's really tough to explain. Like, putting text in boxes is pretty tough because then you have, like, flows, you know? But, you know, there's ways around it, but that's part of the design, you know, being a bit of a code-savvy designer. I like what you're saying.
And then there's challenges that are exactly the opposite way around, right? They're just nerdy only. Because the designer's like, put an image there and put the image that I want there. That's what the designer's input would be. And the developer's like, yeah, but which one of five? You know, and I want to serve. So it's a combination of nerdery.
It's making it harder to be, I think, just a designer. If you're just a visual designer for the web, I think your job is going to become very difficult. I think you really need to be able to understand the way that the development works and the way that the text flows and things like that, because I mean, if you don't, then how can you even think about designing for it? It's impossible. You can't just design on small Photoshop canvases anymore.
Right. And so, gosh, we didn't even ask the question. We just started talking about it. Jason McGovern asks, when it comes to responsive layouts, I usually only see designs with vertical scrolling where the width, different widths, trigger various layouts at certain breakpoints. Do you think that we'll start seeing more horizontally scrolling designs that are responsive based on the viewport's height as opposed to the width? Now that more browsers are this is a weird way to end it, I guess, but now that more browsers are supporting the CSS3 column property. Column just means like it breaks text into columns. You know, it doesn't mean like it would be a weird way to make a horizontally scrolling site with columns. You know, you'd have to like make the parent container like ridiculously wide and then use a ridiculous number of columns. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure that property equals horizontally scrolling sites.
And then if you're scrolling sideways, you then have to look from the top of the screen to the bottom of the screen. So you're reading left to right and top to bottom, the opposite way around from how you're used to.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I don't have anything to say.
I was going
to
say, there's like horizontal sites in general are sort of difficult because you need to know the width. Like you have, like, vertical just flows. Like if you keep adding crap to your DOM, like more height is added by default, you know. But that's not the case with the width. Like you can't just keep adding width. You have to specify width. So that's where like it's sort of impractical that horizontal scrolling designs will become like the default. That said, Windows 8 is coming out, and that's got like a horizontal UI. So I think people are going to start trying that a lot, and so it could be really interesting to see what people are bringing to the web in terms of horizontal stuff. But I think it has to have a JavaScript dependency, like, because you can't just assume your page is going to be 3,000 pixels wide.
We'll see. Right now it is. I think there'll probably be stuff coming to CSS for
auto flow with
paginationy stuff. You know what? I think of ebooks as horizontal design, don't you? Like you're reading a book and you're done with the page and you flick it to the left and it changes page. You know, it's really just page. And horizontal just is like, it just happens to be how the animation flicks over. And it could just as easily flick upwards or whatever. But I kind of like the idea of having pagination be part of, you know, it would help with really reading-based sites, you know, like break this into a chunk. So I've seen some interesting work done in that area anyway. I don't know what else I have to say about that. But, you know, maybe CSS regions will be a part of it, right? Like make this huge stack of divs or whatever that are the exact size of the viewport, and then have the content flow all between them, and then have like a flick motion change the z-index of which one you're looking at or something. You know, so you have this kind of page feeling going on. I don't know. I'm just riffing. Yeah.
Just riffing. I need a riffing sound. Like, sweet solo. When I am. Anyway, good question, Jason. I bet we tackle this multiple times in the future. I'm curious how it's going to all work out. Like the horizontal stuff. It's a dimension we're not using for sure. But I don't know.
Do we have time for a few more here? Do you have a fancy meeting today you have to get back to, Laura?
No, I'm good.
Good.
It's good. Let's go. This one's about colors, which we talked a lot about colors, so I figured this would be a good one to add. This is from Matija Moronik, and she says, hi guys, I seem to have a lot of problems with coloring my websites. They usually end up really desaturated with one accent color, similar to GitHub. As soon as I try adding more colors, I can't seem to manage importance of the elements. Do you have any recommendations about how I should start giving life to my designs? Are there any good resources on learning how to color stuff on a higher level than just trying stuff out that looks, and, you know, trying it out until it looks okay? Thanks. I'm going to defer to our color expert and popular color lovers guest, Laura.
I don't have any good resources, to be honest. But one thing that I do when I'm choosing palettes, because if you have too many colors, you do find it's very difficult to show hierarchy. I tend to choose a set of colors that are all very close together in the spectrum. So if I'm choosing a set of blues and I've got all different types of blues, and then I'll have one accent color. So it's not a case of just using grays and whites and an accent color, but just using two very different colors on the scale so that it just sets it apart, makes it stand out a bit more. You've got one thing that you can use to draw attention to, your buttons and headings and things like that. That's the kind of how I try to do it.
Yeah, so when he says here, is this the one? Yeah, like he starts with a desaturated kind of look, probably, you know, grays and whatever, and then picks an accent color. That's not too, it's not like an awful way to go, really, is it? Or, I just when I read that, I was kind of like, I don't know, I kind of do that sometimes, and that, because if you pick like some really chill colors, it's easier to pick. Then you're like, well, I'll pick like a cool green or something, and it'll just kind of automatically work. And then you have the green, and then green kind of suggests other ones to go with. I feel like, not that I'm like some color master, because I'm certainly not, but it comes up for me in my work when I do plenty of color choosing, and I just find that colors suggest other colors once you start picking them. There's only so many different places you can go if you pick like this, you know, and I feel like that's evidence a little bit on your site, right? Like just the homepage has this, you know, kind of deep purples on it, you know, so there's that blue that goes with that purple. There's not an infinite amount of, well, if you want to get mathematical, there probably is, but if you're just thinking of,
well, you don't know, want to pick colors that are too far away on the spectrum, so you don't really want to team like yellow and purple or red and green, because they're the ones that clash, and so you want to pick ones that are close in the spectrum, which only gives you a certain amount of choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and unless the job of it is to be super bold or whatever, like a yellow line would have been pretty visible there, but it would have meant a lot, like under your name, I mean. It would have been visible and fine. There would have been enough contrast. It wouldn't have been too vibrating. It would have been okay, but it would have meant something a lot different. It would have been like really super strong. Your eye would just go right to a bright yellow line there instead of that blue line. Anyway, you know. But instead it's chill. It's just kind of a more relaxed separator between your name and the menu. I don't know.
On some pages I've picked out some slightly brighter colors just to just because it works better with the subject, but it does have a different effect. It does draw your eye much more to the top left. So I don't know if that's successful or not.
Well, you get to decide. It's your own site.
Yeah, or everyone else will tell me on Twitter.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. Yeah. What was it you were saying about riffing a while ago?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm just riffing.
Excellent! Yay!
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I might need to post-production that and give it a little more juice to get loose. But that was great. That was a P. Cried Zagin. I'm murdering his handle in the chat room. Thanks, dude. Really appreciate it. Yes.
Oh my God. There's a BillandTed.org. All right. Last one. Michael Van Dorth has a two-parter here, I think. So in the design process, in this case, assuming you are designing outside of the browser, Photoshop or paper or something, what sort of layouts do you normally attack first, mobile or wider desktop one? So it's the classic, do you go mobile first? I mean, did you start it on some paper for what? Well, let's just pick, instead of talking about your site, which we've done plenty of, what's a recent client that you've had? You do the sites for the future of everything e stuff, right?
Yeah, I did those sites. Mm-hmm. That was, yeah, reasonably recent. It's strange, I do them all three at the same time because I find it's a system that I'm designing rather than individual screens, because you need to think about the way that the elements relate to each other, because otherwise the site will be unrecognizable. If someone uses it on mobile and then goes to use it on a really big screen, they won't know where anything is. So you've got to think about how it works across the whole lot. And I find if I work just on mobile, I forget about the desktop. If I work just on desktop, I tend to forget about the mobile. So what I'll do is on paper, I'll draw side by side three different widths, and I'll add in the elements one at a time to all of them and play about with them in that way, which is very, very unconventional.
That's something I've never heard either. Yeah, but hey, clearly it works for you. Huh? So literally, yeah, that's interesting. You just kind of work on all three at once.
Yeah, because otherwise I think I can get too tightly focused on the different sizes and cool things I can do. You can always add in cool additional things later on, sort of different ways of displaying things, but you need to have the basics consistent first.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. And, oh man, I like it. I like the idea of three, too. That seems like such a common, you know, like that. It's funny that that's, I don't know, taken hold so strongly is like, it's desktop, tablet, mobile, you know? There could be more, but that's our go-to these days.
Yeah, it fits quite well on a notebook if you've got a double page open. You can have one page for a big screen and then the other two on another page.
There you go.
But it's, yeah, I think it's important to not think about the actual widths when you're doing it, but just
how just much the
content
general
you're trying to squeeze in.
Sure, sure. So, Michael, yes, which one do you do first? Laura says all. The second part of it was that when working on the CSS then, so after you've gotten to the browser in these cases, do you normally work on the wider layouts for, like, so, okay, so you attack them all first, you know, design-wise, but then once you get to the browser, which one do you start CSSing first?
Oh, mobile first, always.
There you go. That has a stronger opinion. Mobile first.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah, and that's all Michael wants to know here is, like, do you try that or do you normally? That's interesting. That's interesting. I would say I don't know. I'd have to. I haven't worked on a like clear cut, simple, you know, like start to finish kind of design to end product site in a hot minute here. But I think my brain at the moment still suggests kind of maybe I would design it mobile first, but it would be hard for me to start writing code mobile first.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of, when I say mobile first, like, it's almost nothing first. So the first version that I do will be all just sort of things like color, link styling, for things that would be the same on every screen. So the same way you'd start your CSS if you were doing a wider screen first, but then adding in the smaller, more specific stuff.
So you start out with like a base layer of constants that everything has, and then you start layering in specificity for mobile, tablet, and desktop. Yeah,
because then you know, in theory, that should accommodate absolutely anything at all that supports CSS.
Nothing first, as Laura put it.
Yeah. I like it. New book. You just got your A Book Apart title.
Content first. Yeah.
Nice. Well, cool. I think that's all the questions we have for today. And, you know, we got to get people back to their day jobs. But, Laura, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And as usual, how can people find you, follow you, give you money? How does that work?
I am Laura Kalberg on absolutely everything. No spaces, just Laura. On Twitter, on app.net. My website is laurakalberg.com. Yeah, nice and easy.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping it simple. Nice. Okay, perfect. And then thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, you guys, for coming out into the chat room. We really appreciate that. You guys always fact-check us really nicely. Rate us up in iTunes. Just click 5 stars. It's that easy. And follow Shop Talk Show on Twitter for all the updates. I've been thinking about the Twitter. Maybe we'll make it a little more active. But, Chris, we'll talk. But if you guys don't want to be active, just tell us. So there you go. That's how you solve that, crowdsource. Anyway, that's all I got. Chris, you got anything?
ShopTalkShow.com.